to Darrell Revis. Shut your pie hole. Shut your pie hole.
Lee, before we go any further, this podcast is presented by my friends. That's right, my friends at Bill Curry Ford. Right there on Dale Mabry. It's a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the east side. It's a real family business, Mr. DeKemper. Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years. That's before Bette Midler released her first album. Right now, you can get 0% financing. I got to say that again, Lee. 0% financing plus tremendous incentive offers at Bill Curry Ford on the 2019 Ford F-150, a vehicle that you are very familiar with, the 150 XL and the 2019 Ford Escape models, in addition to plenty of others. I drive a beautiful 2020 Ford Escape from Bill Curry Ford. It's a tremendous vehicle. It's a great ride. I've already done things. I've changed security codes. I got seat warmers. I don't care if it's 75 degrees out. I'm putting my seat warmers on. Toast my buns over there, DeKemper. And you can get the best deals in town right here at Bill Curry Ford. So get your keisters here and start shopping. BillCurryFord.com. Buck fans, Buck Nation, this goes out to all of you. Save the date. Our huge annual NFL draft party will be at a new location, Big Storm Brewery, Clearwater Tap Room, 12707 49th Street North, Thursday, April 23rd. It's 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton. I've already been there. It's a tremendous place, and it's going to be fantastic. Keep an eye on joebucksfan.com for details later this month. But we've already got the date. It's going to be Thursday, April 23rd. That's the first round of the NFL draft, and it's going to be a heck of a night. The food at Big Storm, first rate. And, of course, it's all about Florida's best craft beer. Big Storm, brewed right there in Clearwater. Lee, try the Bromosa. Not the Mimosa, the Bromosa. A fantastic tangerine IPA, and see all the great beers at BigStormBrewery.com. Use their storm tracker. Yeah, they've got a storm tracker to find Big Storm near you. You can even head to their second location. It's Pasco Tap Room. It's in Odessa, 2320 Success Drive. But the party is going to be in the Clearwater 49th Street location. I'll see you guys soon at Big Storm. Be there.
Ira is fired up for that draft party. It's early, but we are counting down the days. So much planning has gone into this. It's going to be so much fun. A lot of details coming up. We're going to have a huge announcement right after the Super Bowl. Been many months in the making at Big Storm in Clearwater on 49th Street. Fantastic beers from Big Storm. Now, the podcast, thanks to you for making it so very popular. It just keeps growing and getting bigger. And no matter when we put up the episodes, the listenership is incredible. Ira continues to pop in and out of the Google Play Top 50 all podcasts across the nation. And you can listen and leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Podbean. And we love the reviews, Stitcher, a lot of outlets to listen. And of course, so many of you tune in right at joebucksfan.com. Thank you to our friends at Pin Chasers, the greatest bowling alley, three of them in the Tampa Bay area. That's where you want to go. And I love Pin Chasers because they have a daily special. That beautiful beach weather is fading away, and it's a bowling weather, if you will. Every Tuesday is the Pizza Bowl at Pin Chasers, starting at 9 p.m. Enjoy unlimited pizza and bowling for just $10.99. All the pizza you can eat. That's a pretty darn good deal. Great time out with friends. Every day is special at Pin Chasers, the Sunday Breakfast Bowl. Free shoes all the time at Pin Chasers. Get to pinchasers.net, reserve a lane, and have some fun. And here is Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to another edition of the world-renowned Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the one and only King of Pasco County, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the Custodian of Canton, none other than Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you doing today?
DeKemper, I've never used this phrase on one of our podcasts. We've been doing this for 3.5 years, but I might as well start right now. I'm exultant.
Exultant.
Kansas City. How about those Chiefs? I watched the whole post-game thing. Now, I got to tell you, at 17-7,
I was thinking about another Liz Taylor movie, like I was when it was 24-0 the previous week against Houston. For some reason, they start shabbily. They look nervous. I don't know what the hell's going on with special teams, because everybody in the world knew that Tennessee was going to do that fake punt, and they let him do it. The guy's wide open going down the middle.
Everybody knew that was coming.
Chiefs got a guy named Dave Taub, T-O-U-B, I believe, long-time special teams. All I hear every year is, he's one of the best in the business. Well, let me remind you of something, Mr. DeKemper. Against Houston, they had a punt blocked. Tyreek Hill dropped the punt. And now they got exploited on a fake punt. Mm-hmm. So my answer is, Mr. Taub, get your head out of your ass, because you're playing the 49ers for all the marbles. But right now, and you know it better than anybody, Lee, 55 years a Chiefs fan, and I'm going to tell that story again. I told it a year ago, but now is the perfect time to tell it, because people are saying,
Hank Stram,
wait a minute. Why is the Sage a Chiefs fan? He grew up on the mean streets of Brooklyn. Got nothing to do with the Dallas Texans or the Kansas City Chiefs or Lamar Hunt. Nothing.
And by the way, there was a team called the Dallas Texans. And it was the Kansas City Chiefs.
And won an AFL title
in
62.
Right. That's right.
That's the famous game where the guy won the coin toss in overtime. And because Stram told him, we'll kick off, but the wind's 30 miles an hour, so take the side where they got to go into the 30-mile-an-hour wind. The guy's name was Abner Haynes.
Oh, yeah.
Stram sent him out for the kick, the coin toss. The Chiefs won the toss, and Haynes said, we'll kick to the clock. Well, not only did he give up the ball, but the team had the wind behind them for 30 miles an hour. Stram almost strangled them on the sidelines, and the Chiefs ended up winning the game.
Didn't Abner Haynes lead a boycott of the AFL Pro Bowl because it was being held in New Orleans? And
you know what? You might be right about that.
And African-Americans were being mistreated.
He was a very good running back. He was a good running back. And you're right. He might have been in the forefront of that movement.
Yeah, and he said, and rightly so. We're not putting up with this crap, and he walked out.
All right, I'm going to tell this story. I'll keep it quick. Who does the Sage like? All right, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the San Francisco Giants. Now, here I am, I'm 14 years old, I'm walking down the street, you know, Cropsey Avenue, going to cross over to King's Highway, and a buddy of mine says, I've been listening to you talking about the sports and these three teams, and they got nothing in common. Why don't you root for the Mets? Why don't you root for the Rangers, the Knicks? What are you doing? And it struck me like a thunderbolt, DeKemper. It was an epiphany. You love that word. It was an epiphany, and I realized all these teams were the arch enemy of the teams that my brother rooted for. My older
Raiders
brother.
Fan.
Raiders in the 60s.
Celtics?
Celtics. Russell versus Wilt.
Dodgers?
Dodgers.
Oh,
bingo.
Okay.
All three. Now, the question is, why is he a fan of those teams?
And you were a fan of the San Francisco Giants.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember, the backdrop is the 60s.
Brooklyn.
Marischal.
Only a few years later.
Yeah, Marischal, Club, and Roseboro over the head.
Oh, did you see that Venezuelan video, baseball?
No!
I thought I sent it to you.
Why, does it get Marischal off the hook? Because he's still responsible for the worst moment in baseball history.
A batter, or a pitcher threw behind this guy, and instead of him attacking the mound, he started clubbing the catcher.
Right over the head with the bat? Oh, that's something out of the Three Stooges. So anyway, that's the story of my Chiefs. We're talking about the mid-60s. We're talking about Len Dawson.
And again, that was just a handful of years after the Giants left Brooklyn, left New York.
Yeah, I mean, I was very young when they left in 58. But, you know, this is like 64, 65. Now, let's do a quick review. In the 60s, the Dodgers always won the NL pennant, and the Giants ended up two games out. Two games out every year. Giants second. Bill Russell won 11 titles in 13 years in the NBA. The Sixers sucked eggs for the most part. They won one championship.
So Cunningham came around, right?
Billy C. But Wilt was the man. And as far as the Raiders and Chiefs, fairly even. Raiders had some great teams. The Mad Bomber.
LaMonica.
Bolitnikoff. But in the last game ever played in the AFL, Chiefs went out to Oakland and beat them 17-7. Went to Super Bowl IV and beat the Vikings. So I got final revenge on them. But the Chiefs haven't really done squat in about 50 years. I mean, they haven't. And here they've come full circle. They get the Lamar Hunt Trophy. Lamar Hunt's the man in Kansas City. He's the founder of the AFL. And, Lee, you know, people can't believe this, but back then I think there were 8-10 original teams. They all had fairly wealthy owners, but some were more wealthy than others, and Lamar came from oil.
Adam's same way, right?
Adam's same way. And some of these teams, which I, including Oakland and New York, I think, before Namath came around in 65, they struggled.
Yeah.
And some of them said, we're thinking we got to pull the plug. And when they told that to Bud Adams and Lamar Hunt, you know what they did? They lent them money.
These are competing
franchises. It was all about the league. It was all about
now, wasn't there a story that, now, Lamar Hunt's father had mega money from oil.
Yes.
And, by the way, he was linked to JFK assassination. I'll say that in a second.
Who wasn't?
Well, yeah.
A.H.L. Hunt, I believe.
A.H.L. Hunt. So the first year or two, the AFL was bleeding money. And some reporter asked Lamar Hunt's dad, A.H.L. Hunt, hey, your son lost $1 million the last 2 years. Think about that now. That's nothing.
Aren't you worried?
Yeah, aren't you worried? And his reply was, he can last another 100 years.
And that was big money back then, Lee. Big, big money.
No, the story about his dad and JFK, allegedly the night before JFK was assassinated. Now, the list of people I'm going to mention, you know they didn't hang out together. So it's BS. Some woman, high society, claims that she was at a cocktail party in Texas the night before JFK got popped with Lyndon Baines Johnson, the original, and in my eyes, only LBJ. That's the only one LBJ to me. That's the ex-president. LBJ, Nixon, and a couple other people that are dubious, and H.L. Hunt. And in that conversation over cocktails, Lyndon Johnson said, after tomorrow, that goddamn Kennedy is not going to be pushing me around anymore.
First of all, why would he say something like that?
Yeah,
involved.
Number two, he wouldn't be drinking with Nixon.
So my Chiefs are in the game, and who are they playing? John Lynch's 49ers. They lost their first 9 games, him and Shanahan, together.
Did they?
In 2017. 0-9. And they look at each other, and, you know, Lynch played on some bad Buck teams.
Oh, that's right. And they had a great second half with Garoppolo. He went crazy.
Yeah, that's right. And then that gave impetus, like, the 49ers are the team to watch in 18. And then Garoppolo got hurt and just screwed them up in week 3. But they were a team on the rise because they proved it this year. It should be a hell of a game. It's almost a pick 'em game in the odds. I hear the tickets are going for like $9,000. I mean, it's crazy.
Wow. When, all the Chiefs fans.
When my wife and son went out to the Bucks game, I bought 2 tickets for them in January of 2003. I think I paid $600 each. I thought that was a lot of money. $9,000 for a ticket? And I'm not sure you're not in the nosebleed section. Well, what's that stadium called now? It's been 42 different...
Dolphin Stadium?
Dolphin Stadium.
I just call it Joe Robbie.
Right off the turnpike. Right
I call
off
it
the
Joe Robbie.
Baby. Good game. I wrote a column. You're involved in so many things that you haven't even read my column yet. Yeah. But the 49ers have an identity, and the Bucks don't. And that's a problem. I have a problem with that.
Oh, I think they have an identity.
And the 49er identity is smash mouth. We're gonna belt you, and you're not going to like it. And we're a tough team to play against. And I don't think the Bucks have established themselves in that way in terms of physicality. And I think it's a problem. And one of the things that gives you that identity, a robust ground game, which you poo-poo and scoff at. And all I see is it took Tennessee to the AFC title game with a mediocre quarterback. And who knows about Garoppolo right now? He's middle of the pack. And they might win the Super Bowl.
Well, I do poo-poo it because it's a passing league, but you know me. How many years have I been screaming for a running back? They won't do it. They can't run the ball. You do the math.
They cannot run the ball, Lee. I went back 7 years. Only 1 year. 7 years, long time. Plenty of backs, plenty of coaches, plenty of coordinators, plenty of schemes, plenty of offensive linemen. Only 1 year they've been better than 22nd in rushing out of the last 7 years.
No kidding.
That's bad. The 1 year with my man Charles Sims and your man Doug Martin. That was the only year. And and that was with Dirk calling the plays for Lovie Smith.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's, you know, it's not really a coincidence. They can't run the ball.
And you know where it showed up, Lee? The 2 games when they had big leads against Detroit.
Oh, absolutely.
And in the second half, you want to bleed the clock, they can't do it.
Yeah, and the Giants. You're absolutely correct. And here's what I can't figure out. You know, it's pretty clear that Arians doesn't put a high value on running backs. He's said that. He's actually said that. And What did they want to do defensively? Everybody scoffed at Arians when he said, we want to stop the run. And why do coaches want to do that? They want to turn an offense one-dimensional.
It helps you.
Oh, of course it does. So if you know you want to do that defensively, and by the way, the Bucs defense is one of the league's best last few weeks of the season. They really turned around. So when you say the Bucs don't have any identity, I believe they do. They have a sturdy defense.
Sturdy run defense.
Yeah, well, their pass defense got pretty good.
It got better.
Again, the Bucs had one of the best defenses in the NFL last month of the season. So I think they've turned a corner there. But the Bucs do have an idea. They have a sturdy defense. Houston will admit that. They struggled against the Bucs. And they're, throw first, ask questions later offense. You may not like it, but I think that's their identity. Bad, weather, bad, good, or indifferent, I think that's their identity. But with the running attack, Arians clearly doesn't value a running attack. He said as much. He
goes, yeah, David Johnson in Arizona, he's pretty damn good.
Well, that was a rookie and he got lucky. He already said he's not going to spend a high pick. David Johnson was a third round pick. He already said he's not going to spend a high pick on a running back.
When he had him, he ran the hell out of him, though. He ran him.
He did, but again, he didn't spend a first round pick on David Johnson. He spent a third round pick. Big difference. That's a second day draft pick. What I'm getting at is, Arians clearly doesn't value a running attack. He clearly does not. But yet on defense, his main goal is to turn an opponent's offense one-dimensional. Well, yet he himself...
That's Bowles' goal. Maybe you're giving Arians too much credit on the defense.
All right, well, then if you say that's Bowles and not Arians, still, Arians knows what Bowles is doing. He knows his goals. He knows the game plan. He knows him.
And he knows why.
So why would you voluntarily want your offense to be that one-dimensional? Now, I'm a passing guy. I get it. But that doesn't mean you should ignore the run game.
Just because he doesn't want to draft a running back in the first round doesn't mean he doesn't want a good ground game. He wants a good ground game. Bucs don't know how to do it.
I never suggested he came out and said, we don't want a good ground game. What I am suggesting, once again, is he doesn't value, like the Bucs don't value drafting a defensive or edge rusher. He does not value a running back in a sense. He's not going to go out and pay top dollar. He's not going to spend a first-round pick. But what I'm getting at is...
He's not the only coach that feels that way.
He's not the only coach that feels that way. But good grief, you and I both just... We saw it. We just mentioned it on this podcast how that's come back to bite him. But my point is, I want to take your line of thinking. Arians clearly sees what Bowles is trying to do. And if he agrees with that, why is Arians, in practice and words, making his own offense one-dimensional before they even get out of the locker room?
Well, he must have went into this year thinking he had the backs on the offensive line to have a decent ground game. That proved to be incorrect.
Well, remember how he got mad at Leo Haggerty when Haggerty asked him about your bad running backs, and he snapped? That's the only time I ever saw him snap.
I love our running backs.
Who's just not bad, yeah.
and he loves them so much that he's probably going to let Peyton Barber hit free agency.
He should.
Most likely. Now, Lee, I'm not letting this go without adding one final aspect of this team, which we don't talk about too much, special teams, and here's why.
Goose Goslin. I saw it this morning.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons he's got such a stellar reputation among football writers that Bill Belichick used to call this guy
for advice,
for draft advice.
Yeah,
I mean that's strong stuff. And I saw the two collaborate in Canton that day at the 11-hour meeting.
Wasn't Edelman as a result of Goslin's advice?
I believe that's right. And Goslin was there, and Belichick, and Belichick sought him out that day in the room.
Wow.
Every time we took a pee break.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm trying to get two words in with Belichick because I'm trying to get him to talk up John Lynch, which in the end he wouldn't do because he says he's mad as hell about Rodney Harrison not being in the room. So and I'm not knocking Rodney Harrison. He was a heck of a player, but... Special teams, Goslin does this yearly review. He's the only one who does it. And he breaks it down into like eight different categories and kickoff returns and punt coverage and kickoff coverage and field goal percentage. And I don't have to tell you where the Bucks are in that one. Anyway, he adds up all the numbers. My only problem with what he does is he gives equal weight to, I think, all the numbers. To me, they don't all have equal weight. Okay. But anyway, punt average, punt net average, stuff like that. He added up all the numbers. Your 32nd and final team.
Mm-hmm.
You're Tampa Bay Bucs.
Yeah, I read that this morning. I read it, it was on SI.com.
Can they afford to be 32nd in anything, DeKemper? This is a problem.
Well, what I'm wondering about, and Goslin didn't go into this detail, when he broke the special teams down as far as, kickoff, kick return, punt, et cetera, he only listed the bottom five teams. And the only time the Bucks were mentioned as a bottom five team were punt team.
Okay.
Dead last. So was the punt team, both punt kick and punt return, were they that bad that they dragged down the entire special teams? I don't know. But that's the only mystery. Still, 32nd is 32nd. And that's bad.
I think the Saints were number one. They got that Taysom Hill. He's a multi-dimensional special teamer.
Now, if I remember correctly, Gosselin had the Cowboys ranked very low. And him being a former Cowboys beat writer, and he's based in Dallas, he wrote about the Cowboys being support. He didn't really write about the Bucks, but he went after the Cowboys. But I'm just thinking this, Ira, and you covered the team, you know, almost since their inception. Return game. Outside of Carl the Truth Williams, this team has really never had a return game, really, if you think about it.
I remember the first time that...
Tim Brown, remember that debacle?
I do remember Tim Brown. You know,
the bad Dexter Jackson?
Adam Humphries, sure-handed, but, you know, averaged 7 yards a return. A real good guy could win a game for you.
Of course.
He could win a game for you.
He can flip the field position, yeah.
And absolutely. Brian Mitchell was great for the Eagles.
Yes.
A long time.
And the Redskins, too, right?
And the Redskins. I'm not expecting that, but I'm expecting they got to do better.
No White Shoes Johnson.
No White Shoes Johnson. They got, you know, Deion Sanders. You know, but they got to do better, Lee. I mean, it's not good enough.
Well, 32nd, yeah, you got to do better. With the return game, why is that? I guess some people argue the same thing about quarterback. The franchise is cursed with bad return game.
You know, one thing they did well? Pinion was very, very good on kickoffs. Very, I think he led the league in most times the other team had to start
right?
at the 25.
And he was very bad at punting.
Yeah, but he boomed those kickoffs. Now, Lee, I always talk up you on these podcasts scouring the airwaves, scouring the newspapers, the internet. You don't miss anything. Give me some scuttlebutt. What are you hearing about this dastardly franchise over here that we cover?
I won't go that far. Sad sack might be a better description. Philip Rivers moving to Florida. Now, on face value, it's like, come on. It's not like the guy's moving to Brandon. It's not like he's moving to Ocala. He moved to the Panhandle. I found out Monday it was actually Destin, which is 6 hours from here. Well, he might as well live in Atlanta, darn near. 6 hours from
here. Maybe he's tired of paying California state tax.
I know I would be if I was him. Let's see. California is, what, 19%? Florida, zero? I know what I'm going
to
do.
You're talking about 38-year-old Philip Rivers that some Buck fans are starting to get excited about.
Well, here's the thing. We all know Arians is going to be around here longer than 3 years. I'd be shocked. I think that's fair to say. And I guess it would probably be more accurate. I don't think it's outrageous to suggest Arians has 2 more years. Could you squeeze 2 more years out of Rivers? Maybe. Now, I mean, first off, you have to come to the conclusion that Jameis is not your guy. Well, if Jameis isn't your guy, okay, then Rivers. Now, the latest scuttlebutt that the Bucks are going to draft this Eason from Washington is this 6'6 guy with a
tall gunslinger.
Arms.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rivers is going to be the bridge. Yeah, he's going to be the bridge. Rivers is going to start for a year or two, and by that time, Eason will be ready to go.
All right, assumption one. How do we know Eason's going to last till 14? Are they going to move up to get him?
Exactly. That's a very good point, Ira.
Now, here's a couple of things about Rivers. And I got a lot of respect for Rivers. We always talk about Jameis's competitiveness, you know, with justification. Rivers is a tremendous competitor.
Yeah.
He is. He's also one of the most durable quarterbacks in NFL history. Like a notch below Brett Favre. I mean, nobody's going to touch Favre.
I don't remember,
he never gets hurt.
The last time I remember him getting hurt, did he try to play in an AFC title game with a blown-out knee?
But that's 13 years ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. Yeah.
He plays 16 games a year. Now, here's something that's interesting. He's been known to throw some picks. He's not a guy that throws, you know, 6 picks. He throws about 14 or 15. And that's the biggest knock on Winston. It's not 30. here's another thing. He's immobile. Can't run.
Whereas Jameis can get out of tight spots.
Gets sacked a lot.
Does he?
He does. Gets sacked a lot. He had good weapons with the Chargers. There's nothing wrong with Keenan Allen.
No, that matter of fact.
And he had Antonio Gates for a long time.
It's quite arguable the Bucks are the only team that have better weapons than the Chargers.
You know, and they got that big Mike Williams.
Clemson guy, good.
Now he's not as good as Godwin, but, you know, the guy's a big target. I don't know. I mean, if you get Rivers, you got to go get somebody young because otherwise you got no future. Yeah. It's all about building for a sustainable future.
Well, that's on Arians. He's not going to be here for the future.
Well, that's where a strong GM was supposed to come in, and that's why we got a tough situation here in Tampa. Arians calling the shots. Maybe he's earned that right. Maybe he hasn't. But that's the way it is. Look, the first thing you said is the most important thing. That means they're moving on from Winston, and they've made a decision that they can't work with him, and he's not the guy. That is a very sober decision. It's a sobering moment.
Especially
that would be a sobering moment for the Glazers.
Not only just that, but think of who you're getting rid of. I know, 30 picks. You're getting rid of a guy that led the league in passing, which is almost unheard of.
They averaged 28 points, Lee. I know I always bring up that's a big point. I mean, it's a big point. Without a running game. They averaged 28
points. Yeah, without a one-dimensional. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, that's almost unheard of.
Now, to be fair, I don't like this cottage industry that has sprung up in the last few months about people breaking down all kinds of film on number three and trying to excuse away 18 out of his 30 picks. Here's what I'm going to say, and I don't think this part is arguable. He threw 9 or 10 more interceptions than anybody else in football. That's a fact. I think it's 9. I think 21 might have been...
Baker Mayfield?
And yeah. He's a young quarterback. Anyway, let's say it's 9. All right, so that's a fact. And if you're going to break down the all-22 film on Winston and chop that down to 20, well, I would say you could do the same thing on Mayfield and drop it down to 12.
Well, you could do that with every quarterback.
So you could.
Yeah.
So and that in and of itself is not meaning that Winston's not throwing more picks than other people that are his.
The reporter who wrote that, I give Trevor credit for taking that deep dive.
It's a painstaking approach.
Yeah, that was a lot of homework. I'm applauding him for going through that work. But I agree with you, Ira, in a sense that every quarterback in the NFL, you could break down, well, that interception should have been dropped or what have you. I get that. I understand that. So I give Trevor credit.
The problem is he's got a 5-year track record of doing it. That's a problem.
Yeah.
You know,
I think by year 5, it's a pretty good idea that that's who he is, for better or for worse. Like Michael Lombardi said on his podcast a couple weeks ago, Winston's good is so good, you're going to have to either, you're going to have to find a way to live with the picks. Can you do that?
I think you'd agree with me that from his body language several times this year, more than a few times, Arians, especially post-game, when he didn't have time to cool down and things. And he gets in that room very quickly.
Yes, he does. Almost immediately.
Yeah, almost immediately. And I think you'd agree with me. Several times this year, he was taken back by Winston's performance.
Shell-shocked.
Shell-shocked ain't bad.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't there in London, but I imagine that's one of the games that he was shell-shocked. I probably thought that kind of game was beyond Jameis Winston in year 5.
I'll never forget and we were talking about Jameis in year 5. It was Jameis in year 2. I'll never forget that. I'm pretty sure it was the Broncos game where Dirk Cutter at his press conference, it was like an oh, by the way comment. I don't think he meant to say it for public consumption. He was just that frustrated. And he said, I thought we were past this.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, that's the sentiment.
And that was the same kind of reaction that Arians had. Like, whoa.
Are you hearing, Lee, anything going on with Barrett, JPP,
no.
Nassib?
No, no.
Sue?
No, but the thing I have heard, I have no idea how accurate this is, but a guy that is pretty accurate, he told me, and I'm not going to say specifically who, but he told me a member of Jameis's camp, and he told me the exact person, but I'm not going to say it because he didn't expect this to be public consumption. Told me that a member of Jameis's camp is telling people Jameis has 2 NFL teams lined up ready to sign him. So if he goes to free agency, the Bucks better play ball.
And
now I have no idea if that's posturing.
And the expectation is that those would be multi-year contracts.
I don't know. My take was pay. It was flat play. I don't know about multi-year, but it was like, 30-plus million.
Lee, as far as the front 7 on defense is concerned, I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm not going to flip-flop. I still think Sue's going to be the odd man out.
You think so?
I just have that feeling. Having said that, he played better than I thought he would. Not much of a factor on the pass rush. Now, you said he wasn't brought here for that purpose.
Well, I was told that by someone.
It wouldn't be such a terrible thing if he got six sacks.
Yeah, yeah.
But he didn't. So, to me, with the development of Vea, who I think Vea hit the wall in December.
He kind of tailed off a little bit.
He kind of tailed off a little bit. It kind of reminded me of...
Well, and that was his first full season.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the linebacker from a couple of years ago who came in.
Khan?
The guy who hit the wall also in December as a rookie. Played very well. He filled in for Khan a little bit in the middle. Also played the outside.
Oh, you're thinking Kendall Beckwith.
Yeah, Kendall Beckwith. Kendall Beckwith. I thought he hit the rookie wall in December. Mm-hmm. Vay is not a rookie, but technically he didn't play a full year in his rookie season.
Correct.
I think he's going to be a very good player. And you know what? Don't discount him on the pass rush. He does push the pile back a little
bit. Well, I'm going to apologize. Yeah, he does. He very much so, yes. Now, I have to apologize. I didn't catch the name. I was told he was from Auburn. We're going to get into mock drafts here in a little bit. And I know what you think of him. And I'm going to say something that I think is outrageous I read today. Or at least, not outrageous, just the guy didn't know what he's talking about.
I think I read the first 2020 mock draft the day after the 2019 draft ended.
Well,
I mean, that's how crazy.
This Matt Miller, who I've met the guy before. I get along with him. I don't have anything against him. Very, very sure of himself, let's put it that way. And he's one of these guys who puts out a mock draft every time he changes his underwear. I mean, what's the point?
You mean that little 3.0, 4.0, whatever.
Just give me 1.0 and that's it. You know, stick to your guns. Be like Joel Bushbaum or be like Mayock. Do one and that's it.
You mentioned 9 different guys for the 5th pick in the draft. The odds are you're going to be right. And then you start crowing about it. As I predicted.
There's a different guy who did that. I'll get to that in a second. But anyway, Matt Miller, he does some podcast. It's called Stick to Football. I don't know who his cohort is. And I just happened to catch a video clip. And his cohort was saying, this defensive tackle, and I didn't get the name, I apologize. There's a defensive tackle for Auburn, basically he's a Via clone. He said this guy is so good.
Kinlaw?
It might be, I'm not going to guess, I don't know. But he said this guy is so good, there's a possibility he could be there at 14.
You said he's a clone of who?
Vita Via. He's a Via. Okay. He's a defensive tackle, he's a monster.
Run stuffer?
You name it. He's just a stud and a half.
And he should be there at 14.
Well, they say there's a very real possibility he could slide to 14. According to these guys, who knows? Anyway, he said, if you're the Bucks and this guy's there, he's so good, you almost have to take him. Now,
Lee, based on your history, I don't think you'd have a problem with that.
I wouldn't have a problem with that, but what I'm going to
add... he's not an edge rusher.
No, he's not an edge rusher, but here's the thing. If Sue leaves in free agency, and that's, you know, the draft will set up based on what teams do free agency-wise. So once free agency comes, we'll have an idea if Sue's going to be here or not. If Sue does sign somewhere else, then that makes a lot of sense.
It does.
And this guy said you slide him over to Sue's slot. You got Via and this guy.
You got two young studs there.
Yeah, exactly. And both under rookie contracts.
That's right.
So you'll save money. And that makes a lot of sense. Now, whether that happens or not, I don't know. But this guy had a compelling argument that could happen and why it would make sense. And I agree. And it was a compelling argument, and it did make sense. Now, I was told by someone at One Buck Palace, I may have mentioned this on your podcast before, that the Bucks thought when they devised their defense, they brought in Sue, that they thought they could get more quarterback pressure from the linebackers rather than having Sue go after the quarterback. They thought Sue would be more effective clogging up the middle, eating up blockers, and letting the linebackers run free. Now, I don't know if that's...
I wouldn't call that plan a total success in 2019. Well, I mean, you're talking about Lavonte David and Devin White should have combined for 10 sacks. They didn't.
But they also have a linebacker who led the league in sacks.
Oh, well, you said up the middle pressure.
They wanted to eat up blocks. Of course, they wanted to clog up the middle.
Okay.
But they wanted to eat up on pass plays. They wanted to eat up blocks to allow the linebackers to roam.
But, Lee, before the year, we talked about blitzing up the middle a lot with the linebackers. We did talk about it.
Okay.
Because you know why? Because
Devin White couldn't do it.
But I understand what you're saying. Look, there's a lot of conjecture, and every day a different story comes out about this guy. But I always go back to one thing that Arian said, which was unequivocal. It's the only thing he said that was unequivocal about some of these guys. He never said anything like that about Winston. He never said anything about Sue. He never said anything about Pierre Paul. But what he did say is, that guy's not going anywhere. And he said it about Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that guy's not going anywhere,
I believe.
Can you let him hit free agency? And you don't have that kind of certainty.
That's a good
point. All it takes is one team, Lee.
Now, I had some guy on Twitter a few weeks ago when I referred to what Shaq Barrett did.
And that man wants to be paid, and we don't have any problem with that man getting paid.
No, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I would prefer the Bucks franchise Shaq and sign Jameis. Jameis is more of a written book. You already know what he's going to be about. or at least you have a better idea. Shaq, you don't know. That could be an absolute fluke for all we know. Now, I've had some people say, well, 19 sacks is no fluke. Okay, fine. How come the guy only had 4 sacks?
So you want to franchise him, and if he does another 14 or 15 sacks, then he's the real deal.
Yeah. It's more of a prove-it contract. Like, okay, you did 19, let's see if you can get 12 again, you know? And by the way, there was a guy on Twitter a few weeks ago, he got all bent out of shape at me because I referred to Shaq Barrett's sacks as an accident. He got all hacked off. I dare you to tell that to light.
Depends how you bent it.
Well, I dare you to say that to light. I can't wait to see light at Indianapolis. Because I will say right to his face, Jason, did you expect this accident? No one. Even Arians and stuff. No one expected
it. Well, you could have said it was a surprise.
It's beyond a surprise. You know. I mean, 19 sacks from a guy who never had more than 4? Come on.
But your buddy is thinking...
This guy's no buddy of mine.
When you say the word accident, that you don't give him credit for what he did. You don't give him credit.
He could never do it again.
He just said, you're...
As an accident. No one expected that.
Well, no one.
Now, if he gets 19 the next 2 years, well, then okay. But for the...
Even I said I thought he was going to lead the Bucks. I thought that was enough of an outlandish statement, but I tempered it in saying he's going to get 7, 8, or 9. I didn't say 19.
Here's how much of an accident that was. And I hope it's not an accident, because that means next 2 or 3 years, he's going to be a monster. Well, everybody that got 19 sacks or more in a season, and obviously the sacks was 1982 they started counting them
as an official
stat. So there's like about 12 players, maybe 15, I'm going up ballpark figure, that have had 19 or more sacks in a season. All but 2 players were drafted by their teams they got 19 sacks with.
Nice.
Only 1 player was traded, Chandler Jones. Shaq Barrett is the only player that's ever had 19 sacks that was a free agent.
Very, very nice.
So when someone says, I dare you to say that to light, I'll say that.
That's Bassinger-like research over there.
Well, there's no numbers involved, so that'd be Bassinger. I'm not a numbers guy.
Very nice. Now, look, I still can't get over this. I mean, I just can't. A guy leads the league in sacks, comes out of nowhere, forces all kinds of fumbles, strips sacks, this and that. He can't make the first team All-Pro team. He can't make it because he plays for the Bucks.
Is that what it was?
This is a real problem here. This is a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, that guy is a first team All-Pro.
It's a no-brainer. 19 sacks, you know.
You know, there's 2 spots for edge rushers. It says edge rusher.
Did Chandler Jones get All-Pro?
I think one of them was T.J. Watt.
It was okay. Better than okay.
I think he forced 8 fumbles. It's a big number. But he had 14 sacks, and this guy had 19. Barrett had an absolutely sensational season. Absolutely sensational. He started with what I believe might be the greatest opening month by any defensive player in NFL history.
You've said it on the Russo show.
I said it. I mean, I don't see what more you could do. And he did it without JPP
in
September. You got to give him that, too.
Oh, yeah.
But he also, people didn't know about him. So then he hit a lull. Because people adjusted to him and still know JPP.
Yeah.
And then when JPP came back, he turned it on again.
Uh-huh.
So, Lee, you've watched a lot of tape of Barrett. The way he comes around and with that bend.
Yeah.
Not a lot of guys can do that. He's very, very good at it.
Yeah, he is.
Very, very good at it.
It's almost hard to believe why Denver would let him go, because they could have had him on the cheap.
And he's good from both sides, so they don't know where he's coming from. Yeah. You know, he's a... What a weapon for Bowles. What a weapon. There's no way in the world Bowles wants this guy to hit free agency.
Who does?
Not a chance. But, however, we've mentioned this. It's also important if you're going to pay him $16 million on a franchise, which I think is the going rate, compared to $27 for Jameis.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to do that, I think you got to bring back JPP.
You really do.
And that's going to take some doing.
Opposing teams, specifically the Saints and Panthers, figured you take Shaq out, you got their defense. Now, that has changed since the rookies have come around, at least last month of the season. But at one point in the season, but early to middle part of the season, Shaq was circled.
It's funny you mention that because that kind of thing comes up a lot in the Hall of Fame room when we meet the day before. Now, of course, I'm not trying to extrapolate Barrett into a Hall of Famer. Of course not. But... what I mean is the principle. The idea is a lot of times in a presentation or talking about a potential Hall of Famer, you'd say, how much part of a game plan was he? The opposing game plan every week. That's sort of one of the definitions of a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, we got Warren Sapp coming in. We better pay some special attention to this guy. We've got Jerry Rice coming in. We got Barry Sanders.
LT.
You know, he's taking up all the time in the meeting room.
Well, okay.
And that's a Hall of Famer. You know. Now, I've had Tom Moore talk that way about when the Colts, and he's an offensive, you know, mind.
Mm-hmm. Tom Moore, the quarterback guru with the Bucs.
And so I asked Tom Moore, you know, during the summer about John Lynch. First of all, he couldn't believe that Lynch wasn't in.
Oh, is that right?
And that's the first thing that Moore said. Forget the statistics. I talk about impact, and by that I mean how much of your game plan are you talking about that guy? And he said with Lynch, it was quite a bit. Quite a bit. We got to know where the guy is. Mm-hmm. We got to know where 47 is. That speaks highly of Lynch.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Of course, I know you don't like mock drafts. And I understand their popularity, but they irritate you. You get indigestion about mock drafts.
I like mock drafts about as much as I like Brussels sprouts, the Kemper.
I don't mind mock drafts, but what irritates me is when you have a new mock draft every week. What's the point?
The same guy, right? The same Vern who's writing it, now it puts out another. Yeah, what changed? Anything change?
No.
The order's the same.
It's not like he found out some guy had a hangnail or something. And that bothers me. But anyway, I grew up with Joel Bushbaum. I heard Joel Bushbaum on Camo X Radio in the 70s and the 80s.
He was a little man from Brooklyn, wasn't he? In a basement apartment, something like that.
Would it be apropos, I'm going to use what Mo Howard referred to Curly as. Those guys are Brooklyn boys. Mo Howard referred to Curly one time as, you Flatbush Flathead.
Flatbush Flathead. Not bad. but from that Brooklyn apartment, he rose to prominence. In draft circles.
So that Belichick was a...
He was a proponent.
They'd bounce ideas off each other's heads. And Light has confirmed this. I asked Light about this. Light would know. He worked with Belichick.
Guy's, he's passed on.
He passed a few years ago. He was the original draft Nick, basically. Joel Bushbaum was. A weird dude, closet personality.
Glasses. Yeah, the nerd.
He was a nerd, but damn, that guy knew his football. Anyway, Light confirmed this, that Belichick, the night before the draft, would call him up, and Belichick would go over his draft board with Bushbaum. And if you guys want to know how good Bushbaum was, do a Google search, Joel Bushbaum, Tom Brady. One of his last drafts, he did a thing about Tom Brady, and the guy was clairvoyant, man.
That's outstanding.
If you read Tom Brady's bio, he nailed him. And by the way, who drafted Tom Brady? Well, Bill Belichick.
Reminds me of the scouting report I did on Charlize Theron when I first saw her in a movie.
But
I sent it to Isbitz in a sealed envelope so nobody else could see it.
Is that when she played Megyn Kelly?
No. It was her. You know what? One of her first movies was That Thing You Do. You remember that?
First time
Tom
I heard
Hanks played the manager at his rock group out of Pittsburgh or something.
Never heard of
it. You don't remember That Thing You Do?
No.
Good movie.
So anyway, the reason why I brought this up is some guy, he works for the Draft Network, and I'm not ragging on the Draft Network. Draft Network, good stuff. This guy did a mock draft on the Draft Network, and he predicted that Bucks would draft this guy. Kinlaw might have been his name.
I believe
name,
it's Kinlaw.
As an offensive tackle. Okay, fine.
Oh, I thought you meant the D-tackle out of Auburn or something.
I don't know what that guy's name is. Right. I apologize. Anyway, this guy said the Bucks were going to draft an offensive tackle at 14. Okay, fine.
Okay.
And the reason why that is, this guy surmised, was that the Bucs can't pass block. And the reason why they can't pass block is they can't, because these guys can't pass block, Bruce Arians can't have Jameis throw the ball down the field. And that's why they need an offensive tackle, because these guys can't pass block. They need pass blocking help. I'm like, wait. Are we talking about the same team that led the league in passing? Are we talking about the same quarterback who led the league in long passes? Are we talking about the same people here?
See that, Lee, that is a classic example of something that I've mentioned on this podcast many times. When these out-of-towners try to opine about a team that you and I live and breathe with, it's often laughable. And here's the perfect example. What's the book on DeMar Dotson for 10 years? Pretty good pass blocker, lousy run blocker. Everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. I think Arian said it. You know, he had never coached him before. He said in the summer, you know, pretty good pass protector. You know, needs a lot of work on the run block. If they're going to get a right tackle, the guy better be a good run blocker. Period. End story.
And by the way, what are we talking about earlier? Running? They need to learn how to run the ball? It would help if they could have a right tackle who could run block.
Let's go over a couple of positions the Bucs will not take in the first round. Oh. I'll start it. Linebacker. They will not take a linebacker in the first round.
I'm not that confident. Levante's getting up in years.
It's not a pressing need. Okay. Not a pressing need. What do you got?
Wide receiver.
That's a good one. I'd like to say kicker. All right, this might be controversial. I'll say cornerback.
Corner?
Corner. They're going to get a corner, but it's going to be a veteran corner in free agency. They're not going to draft a corner in the first round.
I don't think that's controversial.
Okay.
I don't think that's unless there's some kind of medical issue we don't know about.
Give me another one. Oh, I got another one.
Running back.
Not because of need, but because of variant.
Philosophy.
I would say tight end. Tight end.
Good one.
There you go.
There we go.
And I think we can end it right there. We can't say D-line. We can't say O-line. We can't say safety.
You took the words out of my mouth. Safety.
Can't say safety.
I still think.
Although you take a safety in the first round, that guy better be dead.
Well, I still say this. And every time I say this, Sean Sullivan, our good friend at Bill Curry Ford, he's the manager there. He'll get everybody a
concierge service.
There
my
you
friend.
Go. You got to talk to Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford, people. The first family of Ford in Tampa.
And where are they located, Mr. DeKemper?
On Dale Mabry, just north of the stadium, specifically just north of Hillsboro.
There you go.
Anyway, Sean goes nuts when I say this. I would not be surprised, and I think this guy's overrated, this Delpit from LSU, the safety. I would not be shocked at all if they drafted. I'm not saying they should. Please don't misunderstand. I'm just saying that I would not be shocked if they drafted a safety. And right away, I know there's going to be, what about Justin Evans? You can't bank on that guy.
No, you can't.
You can't. I mean, I'm not happy at all that a guy is always hurt, but, you can't bank on him. He's unreliable. Who knows when he's going to be available, if he's going to be available. You got to move on.
Lee, I'm going to end this podcast by making you laugh. It's one of my my aims every week. If I can get you to chuckle, I feel it's been a good podcast.
This is Jim Valvano.
Lee, I'm going to do a shout out. It's an open letter. I'm doing the Kaufman open letter. This is going to a guy that you covered, and basically the open letter is
sign at a discount rate?
To Darrell Revis, shut your pie hole. Shut your pie hole. Stop taking on Richard Sherman. He's a potential Hall of Famer. I don't think anybody would be shocked if Richard Sherman ends up wearing a gold jacket. He's been that good for that long. And he's not afraid to tackle either, by the way. Revis, you're going to get yours. You're going to get your bust in the hall, and you deserve it. For 3, 4, 5 years, you were the best in the business. That, to me, is a pretty good definition of a Hall of Famer. You didn't do it for 12 years, but at your peak, you were the best in the game, and that's pretty good. But shut up, and just because a guy is playing a certain system that you played more and you traveled with the best wide receiver, that's no reason to knock Richard Sherman. And Lee, I'll say this. You're so out of line that I'm calling you Darrell Revis for this podcast, and if you don't like it, lump it.
By the way, I know who's going to induct him in the Hall of Fame.
Who?
Lovey Smith.
Oh. That's the end of this podcast. Good night, everybody. Now you made me laugh. Oh.